Welcome to this episode of the Cool Tool Show and Tell. Our special guest this week is Adam Hill. Hey, Adam, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure, Abby. My name is Adam. I live in Southern California. I started off as a teacher, and then I was an engineer, and now I'm a business analyst in software. And been following Cool Tools for a long time. Life Hacker and Make Magazine, all those good things for as long as I can remember. So I'm very glad to join you today, Kevin.
Well, thank you for volunteering. We appreciate your being here to share some of your favorite tools with us. So Adam, what's an example of one of your favorite tools?
Sure. Well, this one I use every day, a couple times a day, and it is a bike trailer that I pull behind my e-bike. And I'll just describe it. It's got two seats. So I have two boys, and it also has a little trunk area where I put groceries or the items for my son's school in the back there. And it's basically our second car. So we were fortunate. We live close enough to my son's school that I bike him to and from school most days. And it's great. It's covered. So even if it's raining, I just put on my own rain jacket, and it's amazing. I used to do it with a road bike. But then when my son moved schools a little bit further away, I got an e-bike, and it's really nice not to have two cars. Right. Simplifies a lot of things.
So you said you pull it with an e-bike. Is that what you were saying you did?
Yeah, that's right.
That makes sense. And the description of this is that it's a little trailer that has kind of a crooked boom that attaches to the hub area or the real world. I can't tell.
It attaches just with, you take off the nut that's holding on your rear wheel, and it attaches on. It's sturdy, you know, enough for both kids, and they're 3.5 and 1 now, and I think it goes up to like 100 pounds, so they can each be, you know, pretty up there.
And the
room in the back for groceries.
And how much does the trailer itself weigh?
It's not too bad. I think it's somewhere in the range of like 25 pounds.
Okay. I know there are a lot of trailers out there. Did you do a lot of research to hone on as this one as a superior one compared to the others?
Yeah. For us, safety was the number one concern. So it's got, you know, the 5-point straps for the kids, and it's got a roll bar on it. So if anything were to happen, they're protected. And of course they're wearing the helmets in there as well. So safety was the number one concern. It is lightweight compared to some of the other ones. And this one, you can also buy an attachment to turn it into a hand stroller if you wanted to. That wasn't important for us. It also can collapse down for like taking in your car in your trunk. Also not a feature we use, but it's a nice one. So it was a easy choice because of the safety and also like the capacity for it.
And what is it called? What's the?
Oh yeah, this is the Burley B, and it's a bright yellow. So also good for visibility, but that's where it gets its name, I guess.
So the Burley, B-U-R-L-E-Y, Burley B,
yep.
Like a bumblebee,
B-E-E. Yep.
Honeybee.
Yep.
And it looks like it runs, I don't know, $300 or something?
Yeah, which, you know, for something you're not using that often is a lot. But again, it's basically our second car. So from that perspective, the insurance alone is covered.
Right. And it looks like it has a few little reflectors on it as well. And then there's the hood or the front top. Looks like it comes down like there's a screen, and you can make it open or you can fully unroll it.
Right. So it's got clear plastic if you want to block the wind and the rain. And then you can pull that back and just have the mesh if you just want to block the bugs.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah,
the kids really like it.
And you're saying it's enough for two kids. Up to what age do you expect that they could use it?
With their hip size and all that, I'd say, you know, at least a couple more years till they're like ages 8 and 6, 8 and 5, something right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So,
and then the, you know, my e-bike also has like a little saddle seat, so if they get cramped in there, one of them's old enough to sit up behind me, that would work.
Okay. Great. And And again, this is just attached to basically any rear wheel of the bicycle.
That's right, yeah.
Probably pretty universal.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great, Adam. That's a good one. The Burley B. What's another favorite of your cool tools?
Another one that I use almost every day is for my espresso setup, and I've got it here behind me. You already had one guest who had the Flair, which is just the espresso maker itself. I've got a slightly different model than they had, but it's still amazing. But to go along with it, I've got this one. It's called the Nano Foamer Pro, and its job is to make the foamed milk for a latte or cortado or things like that. And
You're holding up, it looks like a pitcher or large fat thermos, roughly the size of a double fat thermos, kind of a cylindrical, maybe 4 or 5 inches in diameter.
Right, that's right. And it has a capacity of about 2 cups of milk, which then foams up to be about 3 cups if you're doing like 3 drinks at once. And the cool thing about it is the Flair doesn't have a steam wand, which is normally how you make steamed milk to kind of that foamy, nice textured milk that's also warmed up for your drinks. And so I started off with this type, which is just a hand frother.
You'll see a little screwdriver that has a little device on the end, that a little propeller of some sort.
Yeah, you can get these anywhere, like IKEA, $10, things like that. This is the previous nano foamer, which it's better because it makes smaller foam, basically. That's the secret sauce. But then going from a hand foamer to this one, reason it's a pro is it holds the impeller. And so there's a tiny impeller with a screen on it.
Right,
And
you're holding up the inside of this cylinder. Hanging from the top is a little rod. It looks like the same kind of a hand foamer, but there's an impeller, a little propeller at the bottom of it, about
That's
an
right.
inch by inch in diameter.
That's right. And so it's very similar to the handheld one. But it has magnets in here, which kind of couple with magnets in the base here. So the benefit of this, you can buy a lot of milk frothers where the impeller is at the bottom, kind of at the lowest part of the milk. And in order to actually incorporate air, it has to suck a huge whirlpool. And that depends on how much milk you put in. So if you put in less milk than they anticipate, it won't work quite the same. But this one, since it goes from the top, based on the speed, it can generate the whirlpool and incorporate the air that it needs to. And so I've had a couple of these that are the older style where it comes up from the bottom. But this one really works well and it just came out. So I'm very happy with it.
Can you explain a little bit more about how the magnet works? Because I didn't quite understand that. Is it lifting up the bottom of it?
Right. So in all of these foamers, in the bottom of the pitcher, there's a heating element, so there's a power source here at the bottom. It sits on a base, and all of them have a heating element in the bottom and some way of spinning a frother.
Right.
And for this one, it spins magnets in the base, kind of like a chemistry hot
Oh,
plate.
I see.
Yeah.
It's
So it's spinning
spinning,
magnets in the base, which
right.
couple with these and spins this one kind of
Okay.
wirelessly.
Right. So instead of having the motor at the top, sitting on the top, it's disguised into the bottom, and it's spinning at the bottom and transferring that to the impeller inside with a magnet. I get it. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. And based on the speed that they go, they're either doing the incorporate the air phase where you're adding the bubbles, or they switch to a different speed in order to make those bubbles smaller. So it's called texturing when you are just trying to get the texture right. And so just by varying the speed, they change the whirlpool. They also have a small flow guide. So it's just a little wedge. It sits in the bottom. It attaches via a magnet next to the measurements in there,
So
and the measurements show you
you've
the
put the wedge inside this thermos like thing, this pitcher,
right.
and it's sitting at the bottom, pointed upwards.
Right. And the reason that they say they have this, and it makes sense to me, is if you do a small amount of milk, you still need to create the whirlpool at the right height so that it's putting in the air at the right time and it's texturing at the right time. And so what this does is it just kind of changes the shape of the whirlpool. And they have three of these that they come with. So you can do oat milk or soy milk or cow's milk, and the different shapes kind of work to the physics of whatever whatever drink you're making.
So you put these in, depending what kind of milk you have, you put in a different wedge, and that kind of initiates the turbulence to make the work.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And actually, when I use the handheld one, I kind of did the same thing by just putting a spoon in and trying to change the shape of the whirlpool. And so when I saw that they designed this one this way, I said, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And
And
so,
this was just on Kickstarter, so I got it, and it's available now, but it's blown me away just how much they nailed it on the first try. The only annoying part is cleaning it, but that's still pretty nice for the convenience.
and that's why they have the motor disguised underneath, because it makes it easier to clean.
That's true. Yeah, the inside is all a non-stick type of thing. They say it's not Teflon. They made sure that it was some sort of modern ceramic style thing, so that it's non-stick, but also doesn't have the kind of forever chemical kind of stink to it.
Right. And this is
Metaphorical stink.
it's about $160.
That's right. Yeah.
And you can get them with different voltages depending on where you live.
That's right.
Nanofoamer Pro.
Yeah.
Okay.
And with the Flair, you can't normally make a milk drink with it like a cappuccino or a latte, but with this, you kind of just start it right when you're pulling your shot. And it is totally on its own figuring out how much air to put in and all that. So it's hands off and it fits into my workflow pretty well.
That's your second one, a Nano Pro, Foamer Pro. What's your third?
My third one is this wallet, and it's basically my only wallet these days. It's a MagSafe wallet. It holds 3 cards and for me a spare 20 as well. And it attaches the back of my phone and it props up. It's about a half a centimeter thick and it attaches on, with the MagSafe magnets, so it holds on really well for me. And 3 cards is just enough for my driver's license and 2 credit cards, and then I also fit in just a spare 20 just in case I'm somewhere where you need cash. And basically it means that my posture is a lot better because I'm not sitting on my fat wallet when I'm out. And because it attaches to the back, it also kind of acts as a nice stand for my phone. And you can put it upright in portrait mode or sideways in landscape mode, and the magnets kind of hold it in place. So it's also nice to be a tripod for videoing me and my family. I can pop it up in 10 seconds.
Sure. And this works on certain iPhones and certain other Pixels or modern phones. How many of them are magnetized?
I'm not all the modern iPhone ones are, I think, since like 14 or so. And you can also put your phone in a case. If it's a MagSafe case, it'll bring those magnets closer to the surface again. So any phone that you ever see stick to like a magnet mount on a car will work with this.
Yeah. And you prefer, in fact, my wife has the kind of it that's built into a case rather than just a little bit of a magnetic attachment. What do you find the difference is in those?
Well, for me, it's nice for 2 reasons. One is because I don't have a case on my phone. This is actually my old phone. I'm talking to you on my new phone. So I don't have a case on it. So that is nice for the slimness of it, and it slides in and out of the pocket easier. But also, if I'm somewhere where I know I need my ID for at a bar or something, I can just pull this off and immediately I can use 2 hands. Like one hand will slide the card up. So it's a little bit easier than if it's sticking on my phone, I'd have to hold it and push
Right.
like that.
I guess you can separate them is what you're saying. You could actually just carry around your ID and cash if you didn't want to have a phone for some reason.
That's right. Yeah. Or I'll mount my phone on my, I have a mount on my bicycle that I'll use to take a meeting on a bike ride. And so this will just be in my pocket while it's on that mount.
I see.
Yeah. And if I want to use my phone on like a car mount, then this would come off so that those magnets would be free for that.
I see. I get it. Okay, so it's a magnetic And those things are called a
It's just
what's it called?
a MagSafe wallet for phone for the iPhone.
Okay.
And I sent you a link for the one I got. I don't have any particular preference. I just went for something that looked good.
They have this like kind of generic Chinese brand names, FYY
Yeah,
card holder,
exactly. Yep.
magnetic, and they run about $9.
That's right. Yeah, they're very cheap, and I figure this one might start breaking at the seams after, I don't know, a year or something like that. I can check reviews at that time and see what's good.
Yeah. So yeah, so if you're interested in sort of consolidating your wallet and your phone, this is a easy step to do that, where you get your two credit cards and a license and
And
some.
to have a phone stand. That was important for me. Again, for taking videos of my family, I'll just set it at the table while I play on the ground with the kids. And then I'm not worrying about, the photography part. I'm just in the moment.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. That's
Yeah,
a great
it's really
one.
nice.
Thank you for that. Okay, Adam, here's your last fourth tool, a favorite tool of yours. What would you suggest?
This is called Eat Your Books, and we have over 100 cookbooks. A lot of them are upstairs out of the way. But my wife and I, that's our number one hobby, which is convenient when you have kids because you got to cook anyway. So it's nice when your hobby doesn't have to go away.
Right.
Yeah. So Eat Your Books is a website. I'll show it here, and it's pretty modern. You can create a free account, but we have the paid one, and the free account lets you track up to, I think, like 30 books or something like that.
So,
And it's got,
this is an
yeah.
app, and you're showing it like it's an app for your phone and for the desktop or the tablet.
I don't know if it has an app. I just use the mobile version of the website.
The mobile
Yeah.
version of so it's a browser, it's a
Yeah.
website. Okay. And
Yeah. So this is just in
the
Safari.
idea is that you use it to track your books, meaning the location of them, or what do you mean by track your books?
So it actually indexes the books, and let me move this just a little bit. So whenever I get a new book, I go to my bookshelf and I add it in here. If it's gonna, I think I have a, just need to wake up my iPad. I'm sorry about that. All right. So if I go into my bookshelf and I go to my books, it has every book that I add is either indexed or it's not. And if it's not, I can request that they index it. And I guess they do it based on how many users have requested it. And so if I just open one of them, it has a list of all of the recipes. And when I click on the recipes, I can see what the ingredients are and what page it's on.
Okay, so
And
wait,
so what.
so this book being indexed is that somebody, whether it's Google or this company, scans, digitizes the book, and extracts out the all the recipes from the cookbook.
It's a person. I've done a couple just for myself and
I
then
see.
submit it, and other people will validate it.
Oh, okay.
And
Yeah.
yeah.
So you
And
mean
in order to,
you've scanned some cookbooks yourself, you mean?
yeah, but it's not scanning because they don't want to get into copyright issues. It's just getting the ingredients and the page numbers. And the benefit there is that the cookbook author doesn't lose anything, but you can use the cookbooks that you have.
So you would tell me how you would use it in typical.
Right. So let's say we're going to the farmer's market and we want to do eggplant. I would just go in here. I would go to my library recipes and I would search for eggplant, and it would say, let me actually put it in. Or pizza or cake or what have you. So I search for eggplant and I have 40,000 results. Now, some of that is because you can add blogs in here.
Okay. All
So we
right.
have a Bon Appetit. We've got,
Good.
our favorite bloggers, but
Right.
I can see that there's one by Be Inspired, A Month of Indian Cooking, Indian Vegetarian Cooking. All of these are cookbooks that we have. And
Right.
I can see, oh, this one looks good. I have that on my bookshelf. Let's go grab it and, get the rest of the ingredients and all
But now, so the 40,000 results, that's 40,000 results in your library or in libraries in the system?
So actually, no, you're right. I was searching the library in the system. Let me search for mine. Okay. I'll search mine. Yeah, I have 55,000 total across all my books and blogs. So I'll search on my bookshelf. I get confused because my wife knew this. Okay, so I have 700 results. I've
So
got it
that's
from
still a
Syrian.
lot of eggplant recipes to go through. So do you normally, like if this was an actual case, what would you do next to search through those 700 recipes?
Well, I usually go first page, as you would. I scroll through and I see the sources. So the first couple are Serious Eats. I might save those for later because I'll always have that. My Paris Kitchen. That's a book that we like, and we haven't done that one yet. So I'll look. Oh, but it has okay, it's a dip, it's an appetizer, so not that one. I'm looking at the parameters of the book and the photo to see what
Wait,
which one I think I want.
could you type that in? Could you say not an appetizer, but main
Yes.
dish? Could you say, and
Yeah, so they've
how
got
does it
sort
actually,
by.
yeah.
So it has only show book recipes or magazine or online. It has filter by recipe type. So that would be like the appetizer, ingredient, courses, occasion, nutrition, and ethnicity.
Right. So
Yeah.
you would do that to kind of look for a recipe. And do you find that today, that's superior than just sort of Googling for recipes in the entire internet?
Oh, of course. Yeah. The thing that makes a recipe good or not is usually the quality that went into the recipe development. And so we know these are the blogs we trust, these are the cookbook authors we trust. And so if we have a cookbook, if we still have it, that means we haven't been steered wrong by that author and they did some good recipe development. So I trust the source here a lot more. And this is just my way of getting there without flipping through so many off of the bookshelf.
Right, but like I don't know, are the websites and blogs you go to, are they not indexed by Google? Do you not get to them, to those recipes, through
Well,
Google?
that's the thing. I can go and I can filter and say I want eggplant recipes from the blogs I follow. And so there you get the trust side of it, and that would work totally fine for people who don't have cookbooks. This would work for that. And again, you could probably do that on a free account because it's not the maximum. So that's a use case that would totally work if you trust, these 10 websites. You could search just on those. And this kind of aggregates them all into one place.
What's your experience been in asking ChatGPT for recipes?
Not good. It's good for inspiration. The other day, I wanted to use up some basil, so I figured out. I just said, "What are some good pizza toppings that go with basil?" And we got a good set like that. But sometimes I'll ask it for tips on things like I'm baking cornbread. What's the internal temperature that it should be? And it can kind of hallucinate if it's not something that you're used to. And the actual recipes themselves, you see people try them out and they're not up there yet. The problem is you're going that's being trained off of just the public corpus, and the problem is a lot of people share recipes that are just to their taste or they don't really work out too well in general. So it's being trained on everything, not just kind of
Quality.
the authors whose taste you trust. Yeah.
Okay, and this place is called Eat Your Books, is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
And what's the economics of that? That's a subscription I'm gathering.
Yes, I believe it's $30 a year. Let me look real quick. Count. It's been a while since it refreshed. Let's see. Annual $40 a year or $5 a month.
Right.
And that's for the premium. The free one is so many books tracked for free.
And the idea is that somebody somewhere is most likely have already what we call inputted or
Index,
digitized,
yeah.
indexed the book that you have. And so you are sharing in their work and doing that.
Yeah, the people who run the site also do book reviews for, legacy magazines and things like that. So if it's a new book that we get for Christmas, chances are it's already in there. All of Ina Garten books, before they're even available in Costco, they're on there.
Would this be useful to people who wanted to cook but didn't have any cookbooks?
Yes, definitely. So one of the filters you can do is for online only recipes where you actually do get the full recipe. Now it's not going to be within the Eat Your Books. It's going to link out so that those people get, you know, their advertising and their subscription revenue. You know, again, it's all supposed to be friendly for the cookbook author, not just, you know, there have been some sites like this that kind of scrape and do data, you know, data scraping to take away that intellectual property, for lack of a better term. But this one's really kind of hand in hand with the authors. So I really like that about it.
Okay. But the idea would be that you could find a recipe. It would take you to online to the actual site, and then you would visit that for the full recipe.
Right. And, you know, I could just go to Serious Eats each time or Bon Appetit each time. But in this way, it searches all of them and kind of get a little more variety that way. You don't just get stuck in a rut.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's a great, great suggestion. Eat Your Books. Okay.
Yeah.
So Adam, we have a few minutes to talk about something you'd like to share with our audience. Do you have something you're working on or that you are passionate about that you want to tell us about?
Yeah. I mean, I'm at a point in my life with the kids where I'm not doing any big projects myself, but I did want to point out two things that I really appreciate right now. One is just Coffee Bean, the local one around the corner. I know the guy who makes it. It's what got me into espresso, and it's just Blue Hummingbird coffee. They ship all over. It's very ethically sourced. I mean, one of the farms that they work with is, you know, a cousin. So they have that, you know, nice relationship. And I mean, doing coffee at home, like, changed my life during COVID. It was amazing going from the office coffee to just exploring. And oh my gosh, if you haven't done it, go to a local cafe that has different beans, and it's amazing. This is my local one, but find one for you. It's really good.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
and the other one.
So your tip would be find a really great source of local coffee and explore.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there are subscriptions that'll surprise you too. I'm sure those are good. I like building the relationship with the local person, Blue Hummingbird. But anyways, the other one, my brother just put out a book, a second edition of a book, and it's the gender book. And it's about all sorts of gender identity. And it is illustrated. It's, you know, a graphic novel. This is the first edition. The second one hasn't come for me yet, but I just wanted to show it because it's a highly politicized issue. And that's kind of a lot of BS. This kind of answers questions in a way that no one's going to be embarrassed. No one's going to be judgmental of you. It's just a resource. So I know I used to be a teacher, and there's a lot about teachers pushing things. Like, we don't have time to push things. Like, this is just helping people with difficult questions about, you know, their identity. And this is a really special, really special book to me. So it's called The Gender Book, and it's a really
And who's the author?
Thing. So my brother is actually Hunter Rook, but on this version it says Mel Rife Hill, because name change. So Mel Rife Hill and Jay Mays are the original authors.
Okay. Yeah. Mel Rife Hill. Okay.
Mel Rife, again, that's the author title, but he's now Hunter Rook. So
okay.
A little confused. But this you can find it if you just search for The Gender Book.
Okay.
It's free. It's free online if you need that, you know, free ebook. But you can also get hard copy too if okay. you need it. So.
Well, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm very glad for the new version. It's updated because, you know, there's always more to learn there.
Sure. We appreciate it. And you said you were a teacher. What did you teach when you were teaching?
I taught sixth grade science and then eighth grade algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. That's another thing I would suggest is if you're just getting close to being done with school, take a couple of years to teach. It's eye opening. You know, you learn to communicate, to present. You learn empathy because you start to realize how what you say out of your mouth can change on someone else's ear and anticipate those sorts of things. So it's really like I did 4 years, and yeah, absolutely wonderful time.
And why did you stop?
I moved to Florida at that time. And Florida, I tried looking, and the options were not sustainable for building a family.
Okay.
Yeah,
All
that
right.
was really unfortunate. I interviewed several places, and I realized I needed a job that wasn't so dependent upon, the local government and what the priorities were there. So in Tallahassee, Florida, they didn't value public school teachers as much as they should. And I knew that when my wife got her PhD, we would move again, which is why we're in Southern California.
All
So I
right.
said, I need a job that it, it's more reliable wherever you go.
Yeah. Well, thank you
Yeah.
for your 4 years of teaching. And you're right. It's if you want to learn something, try and teach
That's
it.
right. Yeah.
So, again, Adam, thank you for your time, for sharing with us. These are great four tools I didn't know about. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and an honor. I it's so nice to talk to you. I mean, I've read
Well,
your stuff forever, so thank you.
this year, our Cool Tools blog will be 20 years old, which means we've been posting something new every day for 20 years. It's only possible because of the very engaged and knowledgeable readers and listeners like yourself. You've kept this place going, and we are very grateful for you. With this idea of 20 years in mind, we decided to try an experiment this year. And I'm inviting our guests and listeners to join me on our Cool Tool Show and Tell, which is the program that you're listening to right now. So if you feel you'd make a good guest on this podcast and have four uncommon tools that you'd like to share with us, please sign up on our form on the website and we'll see about inviting you. You must be comfortable taking off talking on a video, and you need to have some tools that you can show. We record on, as you know, on Zoom. We do a YouTube version, a video version of it, as well as an Audible version. Fill out the form if you're interested, and list your four cool tools, and we'll see if there's a good fit. The applications aren't guaranteed in any way, and we're looking at tools that are new to us and appropriate tools, and whether the times will work for you. So we're really interested in hearing from people all over the world, not just in the US, although the tools have to be available online, easily available online. And if you are a long-time listener, you kind of know what the definition of our tools are. They're very broad. They can be anything that's handy, from something in the kitchen to something you use to travel to a workshop to something professional that we may not know about. We're really interested in things that we don't know anything about. So, this is an open invitation. We'll give it a try. If you think you make a good guest for this podcast, fill out the form. There'll be a link somewhere on our website. And we look forward to chatting with you. Thank you.